Hello there, everyone. This is Chandradasa coming from Bodh Gaya in India, in a big red tent with trees growing in it. And I'm surrounded by 9 fine order members from Australia. They're all waving at you. And we decided we'd have a sort of Aussie round table. And they're completely heroic about this because today's talks went on for ages and everybody's running late. And some of us have got our lunch. But we're going to talk to you anyway about the Dharma in Australia, past, present and future. These fine beings are amongst those order members who are going to take Tri Ratna into the next 50 years and establish what the lion's roar sounds like down under. So I'll pass you on to them.
Dhiramani, I'm from Sydney.
Dharma Modini from Adelaide, South Australia.
Samachita from Sydney now.
Sila Dasa from Melbourne.
Dharma Raja from Sydney.
And I'm Ratna Jyoti from Sydney.
Kamala Mai from Sydney.
I'm Kusala Chitta from Sydney. There's a lot of us from Sydney.
And Maitra Bunda, also from Sydney.
Fantastic. I'm just wondering how many collective years of ordination you've got between you.
Well, I haven't even got 1 year.
1 year?
Yeah.
Two years, 3 years?
6.
9.
20.
29.
2.
31.
25.
Ooh. 20.
7.
Well,
7.
Because I'm 7.
13 this year. 13. So you've got over 75 years, I think, of pledging. Mm-hmm. So you're basically older than the whole order, which is quite a thought.
That's quite a thought.
Collectively. How do you feel about the future? Here you are, 50 years, this is what we're marking. How do you feel about the future?
I think there's heaps of potential in Australia in the future. There's so much space, so many resources, just kind of waiting to explode or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
Good foundations.
I think it's very much of the topic of the convention is that one of the talks earlier, we talked about lots of little flames. And I think the challenge for us is really how we set that bigger vision and come together collectively to actually grow, because I think we've got a really rich environment where we have a lot of order people now, more so than in the days when the pioneers came through and did a stellar job. But it's now how do we carry that baton and really turbocharge those flames to actually grow it.
I think that's, from the International Council perspective as well, that for the region, that's one of the profiles is how do we, as a region, raise our profile, but also because there's so much emphasis on the next generation stepping up and taking on responsibility, and we're seeing that sort of happening with newer public preceptors emerging within the region as well. I get a sense that there's a call there. That's how are we going to take on the lion's roar, given that's the theme of our convention at the moment.
And the two projects that Future Dharma Fund are supporting are really exciting. Most recently, the youth coordinator position. Fantastic. There's great work being done in the Melbourne and Sydney Sanghas already that's paved the way for that. And also Maitripala's Kalyana Mitrata to the whole of Australia, which for somebody like myself in Adelaide is really precious, that sense of networking and coordination and that sense of spiritual friendship that is those flames firing out from across wherever individuals are or sanghas.
Mm. I think that's important, isn't it? Because you're a Dhammacharini in particular that's in a situation where you're the only Dhammacharini. I know there's a couple of Dhammacharis within Adelaide, but they've got other demands on their time as to whether they're involved in the centre there. So I think something like that project has been particularly important for the region.
Yeah, very exciting and very relevant for the future. You're asking us about,
You sound like you're ready for all this. To me, as an outsider, you sound like you're ready collectively to take this on. I'm wondering if that's a new thing or if you've been ready for ages.
The watershed moments was really the establishment of our ordination training programs in Australia. For many years, up to maybe 15 years after the pioneers brought what was then FWBO to Australia in the early 80s in Sydney, and then late 80s in Melbourne, Mitras had to go to England for their training. And that would constantly draw those resources away from our small centres to the UK for several years until there was a trickle back. But now I think we've got the ordination training programs running in Australia. Then we can actually make our own order members here. Of course, they'll visit the UK. and that has actually seen in a greater growth in the number of ordained people in Australia.
Good point. And also it's something about the volume, isn't there, now as you're following on from that, because there is a greater pool of order members. As order convener, I should remember the stats, but it's... I know, well, Dharma Charinis is 36 Australian Dharma Charinis now. Similar, if not more, Dhammacharis. So from that point of view, in terms of numbers, if you want to crunch the numbers, that means there's more people available to help sort of spread the Dharma. So there's just been this natural evolution, I think, starting to emerge.
Yeah. I think the journey has been good. Certainly in my short time involved in the movement in Australia, you can see the growth, you can see the energy. I just think that, you know, as a fairly young order member, I think we are ready to keep growing. It's just how we try and hold the ideal and grow beyond ourselves to actually mobilise that. I think we do struggle with a lot of individual visions. It's how we get that collective energy to hold that higher ideal and move forward.
Yeah, I would really agree with that. I think there's an issue because of the large distances involved, so we're quite spread out. It's quite difficult to get that cohesion and intensity. You know, so there's a tension between wanting to grow and be and expansive and independent, you know, and being connected somehow, being well connected to the root, to the trunk of the tree, if you like.
I was going to speak about Sydney. I think we have such a strong Dharmacharini base to support GFR Mitras going through. One of the challenges that I think we have will be to provide similar support to young people coming through and introducing them to becoming mitras and how wonderful Sri Ratna is. Yeah, that's a challenge, I think, for the future, and I think we are rising to it.
Are there specific cultural things in Australia, the way people operate, the way society operates, that make it distinctive? I mean, I know, of course, you can usually bring things down to a universal level if you look hard enough, but what are the kind of specifically Australian issues that you face trying to do that?
I find it really exciting as a sort of Western Buddhist in Australia, having Buddhism, which always has an incredible effect on a culture. But we, at least as a European presence in Australia and basically the large immigrant presence in Australia, haven't formed any particular culture, really. It's very much in flux and very unformed. So the effect Buddhism could potentially have on that culture could be a really positive one. For me, as an Australian, one of the big issues in that is not really recognising the Aboriginal culture, the original Australians, not even in some ways taking on the way that we've come to occupy Australia and the riches of the Indigenous culture that were there when we arrived and in many ways are still there and not yet appreciated or even in dialogue with. So that, I think that's one of the real drawbacks for Buddhism in Australia. Until we do that, I think we can't really take root.
Yeah, I also think it's why Chandramana's just joined us, and he's also Indigenous, one of the First Nations of Australia, so he might want to comment on that. But, you know, we're very Anglo-centric. We are not representative of the population of Australia. We are not as inclusive and with the racial diversity. So, yes, we don't have a strong Indigenous population and representation, but at 3% of the population, you know, you start looking at Asian and Muslim cultures, which are far more represented in Australia. And that will be our challenge, I think, as well as the young people. It's about inclusiveness. How do we be relevant in a multicultural, diverse environment? And there's just so many dimensions to that.
One aspect I would see following on from that is, I feel up to now, we have waited for people to come to the Dharma. We have a centre which we own. It's a very effective centre. I feel that we want people to come to us. And the next step is we're going to have to take the Dharma out to people. We're going to have to spread beyond our little enclave in the new suburb of Newtown in Sydney and take it to this vast metropolis, which physically is the size of London. It's probably actually bigger in square mileage than London. And I think that will be the next step, is having that confidence to take it out to people rather than say, here we are, come to us.
And I suppose you could see potentials of those little things happening with individuals, isn't there? Like there's the Kuji meditation group that was largely the initiative of Damalata and Padmadakini, and how that's mushroomed there, and the activities that Shanti Deva is doing at Westmead Hospital. It's quite inspiring, actually, what one Dhammachari can do. Samachitta's been involved in some of those, the classes that he's been doing. So that's offering something in the workplace for his work colleagues, not just meditation, but little snippets of Dharma. So that, you know, I think it's starting to happen. I take your point.
I think that's part of the evolution, isn't it? We've moved from a situation where we've got two centres in the two major cities,
yes,
and where we've got order members now, many of whom have gone through the ordination process in Australia, taking the Dharma out into other areas. So Dharma Modini's work in Adelaide.
Port Fairy.
We've got a couple of order members there. We've got an order member up in Toowoomba, which is, I think, the second biggest inland town in Australia. But that idea of linking those people who can end up quite isolated with the order is still an ongoing issue in a way, and Maitripala's work I think is very important there. But then there's, I just led an introduction to Buddhist meditation retreat a couple of weeks ago, and there were young people. It was mainly people in their 20s there, and one of the issues was, you know, say, come along to the centre. Oh, but I live on the northern beaches. Oh, but I live in Liverpool.
Yeah.
So that idea also is spreading the Dharma out through both big metropolises of Melbourne and Sydney, as well as getting out to the other cities and towns in Australia. Yeah. But I think the fact that we do have, as Siladasa said, a pathway now right through to ordination in Australia is a major thing that will help that as well.
One of the things I think we can really use more in Australia, and we're starting to, because of our distance. So some of the GFR mitras, for instance, do Skype online into mitra study. You know, and some of us have got KMs that are in the UK and that sort of thing. And so I think in lots of ways the world's getting smaller, and it's much easier, not just for people in Australia, but particularly, like in regional Australia, for people to be in better contact. So I think that's really exciting. I think there's a lot more to explore with that.
I was just about to ask there, does media play a part in this? Just because, you know, someone who lives in America, which is obviously a very big country, how do you even connect up a centre in San Francisco with a centre in Boston? The distances are so big that you're never going to meet very often.
I think we're still struggling. When I know what, you know, businesses can do around communication across the world, I know there's a lot more we could do. But I think it's an exciting area to...
And I think our conditions can be conducive of us thinking outside the square and being creative. So, for example, because of all the wondrous work of the BuddhistCentre.com, last year on our 50th birthday of the movement, there we were in Adelaide beaming Subhuti down from the London Buddhist Centre onto the wall of the venue that we use to hear his talk that he gave on that amazing occasion. And it was just wonderful to have that sense of connection with the worldwide order through that kind of technology. It was fabulous.
I agree with you, because we had it in Sydney as well. But it was interesting. We had a good order turnout for that event. But the mitras, I think, have got a different relationship. Or friends in them. You know, I think that's just the nature of the... Perhaps not in the UK, have the opportunity of either visiting Yadastana or doing a retreat in the UK. I think there's still something there that we... It's interesting, we're thinking about with the 50th birthday coming up in April this year even, what we're going to do and how we can encourage the mitras, or how do we get them to catch the fire a bit more or something.
I'm not communicating it very well, but
there's something in there. There's been a couple of things that have been quite obvious. We've had good order turnout for things, and they've been important events, but it hasn't been obviously high on the radar for the mitras.
I think that's really important, actually. I'd be really interested to hear what the experience is in other centres, because Dhiramani and I and Krista Chitta are part of the Mitra study night. And I think we've got about 32 active women mitras. Sorry, I'm only speaking about the women mitras here, because that's what I'm familiar with. Of those, I think about 28 or so are GFR mitras. But we don't always get a big turnout for Thursday night study. We typically we might get, say, 20, 21, something like that. And sometimes there doesn't seem to be the level of commitment in terms of staying for the whole block of study, for example. And it is something that really intrigues me too, as to how we can engage Mitras more.
Well, when we were discussing it as a cultural thing, do you think that relaxedness around Australians
means
that
they used to be like that?
In terms of what Tamil Nai is talking about, it's not just always necessarily Australia-related conversations.
Well, we do live in a particular culture, so I'm just interested in whether our culture lends, if people think that our culture lends
to... I don't think it is our culture, because maybe 15 years ago, it was pretty chock-a-block, the Mitra study course. I think it's more to do with the rise of individualism, the rise of, for example, secular mindfulness courses which are readily available. Those kinds of things, I personally think. And how we deal with that, I'm just not sure.
That's actually along the lines of what I was thinking, was that we have an enormous number of resources, almost competing, if you like, naturally, for people's attention in the spiritual world. Mm. And, like, for instance, Melbourne has more than 90 Buddhist centres. And, of course, a lot of them will be ethnic and language-specific and cultural-specific, but that's still a lot for people to go for. There's the new Kadampa tradition, very active. They've got about 7 or 8 different meditation centres around Melbourne, and they offer free class. So there's a lot of competition for people's time out there. And then there's all sorts of online resources. Plus, we're a very travelling culture. Aussies don't take much to get on a plane and go somewhere, whether it's to India or to Thailand or to a Wat or something like that. So I think all of those things are playing in to people's time, and it really is a smorgasbord for people. And then catching our fire to then take a natural commitment to go for refuge within Sri Ratna brings it down to a pretty small number at the end. But that doesn't absolve us of any responsibility in being as creative and welcoming as possible.
That was the question I was going to ask. What is the spirit of the order like in Australia in terms of this lion's roar business that we're looking at and holding that? Just what you were saying there, that, you know, if there's challenges ahead, is the spirit of the order strong? Does it need work?
It kind of relates to that. It's old. And I say that for someone who 25 years ago, at 29 years of age, walked in to do my introduction to Buddhism and meditation course at the Croydon Centre. And the two order members who taught me on that course were 30 and 31. Now I think our youngest Dharmachari is in his mid-40s. And the average age greeting newcomers is probably men in their 50s. And I think we need to have courage to bring younger people through. And where young people are showing real enthusiasm for the Dharma, and particularly in Sydney, they're going off to the UK today to do the 5-month young person's course and doing other things. I think we need to start taking a risk and ordaining some younger people so that they're a presence when other young people come through the door, and not have it down to old men and old women to teach the Dharma.
Young people get young people, old people bring in old people. Mm. And for the future of the order, we need that.
But I think, come back to Kamala Mai's point, is for us to be able to ordain young people, we have to have young people to ordain. So I know we have a couple that potentially, but we need to work out how we attract people. You know, and I think that's part of the challenge we have is how do we make our context relevant into a society that is spoilt for choice? You know? How do you appeal to young people so they're coming to your centre so that you can fast track them, if I use that term? It's all connected.
I'm going to say, I think what we're talking about is actually issues that have been identified a couple of years ago, hence the reason for so much emphasis on the young people, in particular in Melbourne and Sydney centres, and also the reason why we've got now those Dharma Modini mentioned earlier, the funding for the young person coordinator. That young person coordinator is not just going to be for those two centres, it's for the whole region. So that includes New Zealand as well.
And they are a young person.
Really, so I think, you know, we're actually doing it. And I'm not suggesting we sit on our laurels about it, because I think we have to keep the finger on the pulse, as they say. Great, we're already doing something about it, but we need to keep it alive for sure.
But also, I think there's another aspect too, that making sure that the lion's roar is actually the lion's roar.
Exactly.
Because
The other thing that we're competing with, if competition could be allowed as a word, is not just other Buddhist groups, but a whole sort of plethora of quite skillful, socially aware, a generation of people for whom some of what we do may not be all that radical, actually. They've already woken up to the idea that altruism is important, that they want meaning in their lives, things like that. So somehow we've got to steer a course between being too broad and too sort of professional and slick in some way, and, you know, broadening our captured audience, to sticking to what it is that makes us distinctive. So somehow communicating that the passion that motivated us to go for refuge in a way that doesn't put them off. Yeah, that's a fine line to draw.
The true radical and revolutionary nature of Sangharakshita's teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think needs to be set alight again and again and not lost sight of.
An interesting example on that front was being down at Vijayaloka and going down for a swim in our river on the Saturday afternoon and finding there were about 60 young people down there who actually asked us to be quiet and move down river while they held an environmental forum on our rock. So they were going for something, you know, I could see they really shared similar values to us, but they had attracted a lot more people along. It was a students' network, environmental network, but it was right at our place. There was something radical and engaging for young people, being led by young people. That was interesting.
We certainly have those arms of social and environmental activism in our centres, and we've, I'm not sure about Sydney, but certainly in Melbourne we've had global warming activism of various sorts as part of our activities. Coming back to your question about the spirit of the order, I think it's a very important one, because if that's not alive, the movement's just not going to grow. It's as simple as that. Everything comes from the exemplification of the order. Personally, I feel, particularly from the male side, full. Yeah, I'll speak about that first, because obviously I'm most intimate to that. I think when we gather together in good numbers, I feel it is alive and it's healthy and it's pretty good. But that's really the key. If we don't gather regularly, the spirit becomes faint. It really does. But over the years, we've forged a pretty steady rhythm now of two major Dharmachari order weekends and more recently an order retreat per year. And I think that's strengthening our spirit considerably.
And events like Buddhist Action Month, which are on that international scale, and any group can tune into, and in terms of being contemporary, looking at global ethical issues, I thought, you know, what the theme was last year was fantastic in that respect. So it combined that energy around what we've been talking about here at the convention, you know, the state of the world today, and how do we as Dharma farers want to relate to that and engage with it, coming from a framework of Dharma.
And I think the challenge there, Sydney responded really well to the Buddhist Action Month as well. It was a really big time and we had a whole range of activities, and I think that was great. And in a way sort of got people who had that sort of more outgoing interest, that sort of more social interest, to express themselves in a Dharmic context. But I do think there is that challenge in differentiating ourselves, where how do we keep the transcendental alive, you know, that element in our practice that really differentiates us from social activism or from secular mindfulness or whatever it is. Are we communicating that effectively and feeling it with each other? I think that is a big challenge, I think. And it's probably a challenge for all order members, but sometimes I think we can get a little bit parochial, a little bit bogged down in our local situation because it's so far to other situations. So I think those comings together, Siladasa mentioned, are really critical in having that sense of that we're commonly attached or commonly engaging with each other with that element of the transcendental in there.
So to round us off, what would you like to leave for Australia when you're gone?
This is Dharma Mojini, and my response to your question is a vibrant and alive and relevant Adelaide Tree Ratnasangha.
This is Samachitta, and my response to that would be, I don't know whether it's up to me to leave it, but what I would like to see more of is connection and intensity.
Siladasa, I would like to leave a legacy of the example of a good Dharma life, well lived.
I'm Kamala Mai, and I would like us to have a legacy of generosity towards people coming in to the Dharma and a sense of purpose in our practice.
My name's Ratna Jyoti. I'd like to see a really vibrant spiritual community of people working, living, having fun together and transforming themselves in the light of the Three Jewels.
I'm Kisla Chitta. I would like to see the Dharma, meditation, the Buddha, Sangharakshita's teachings, working in the great society. So in your everyday workplace, you know, in the shopping centre. I'd like that to be available to people. I want the Dharma to be really available to people.
Dear Amani, I think the legacy I'd like to think is, I think I see myself as a bridge or carrying the flame of on, hopefully for the next generation, that there is something around, which I'm confident there is, for the next generation to keep building on and spreading the Dharma. So for me, I think there's something about unification and solidity, but strengthening the foundation which we're building on.
This is Dharma Raja, and I echo what Dhiramani's just said, is I'd like to be able to leave a legacy of honouring the gift that Bhante has given us in a way that others can experience it or be exposed to it, and build on all the assets in terms of teachers past and present and the resources we have, so that Asia Pacific can be a stronger presentation of Sri Ratna.
This is Maitri Bunda. I would like to see centres and sanghas across Australia so that people can meet and practice the Dharma together in their communities and neighbourhoods without necessarily having to travel thousands of miles to find a centre or retreat.
I'm Chandramalan. For my people, I'd like to leave the gift of kindness and strength.
Hi there, this is Chandradasa from the Buddha Centre online team. We really love bringing you these Dharma stories from around the world. So if you enjoyed this episode, please help us by taking a moment to rate the podcast in iTunes or in your favourite podcast app. There are so many podcasts out there these days, it really does help people find us. Thanks very much.